Hello, and welcome to EG's Voice of the Region with me, Jim Larkin. Now, this episode marks something of a new era for this particular podcast, as we now have the gift of the all-new Radius On Demand rankings, which offers a level of granularity that means we can zoom right in on any town or city to see who is doing the business and how. And to celebrate this, where better to start than Brighton? It's a city that recently made the headlines in EG as the council there took the unusual step of calling for much more in the way of high quality office space. But was it right to do so? And is this sort of intervention even helpful? Well, one man who can answer that is Max Pollock, Commercial Property Director at Brighton agency Eightfold, which is currently sitting pretty in the city's rankings for disposals for 2023. For Max, Brighton is the capital of the cool and the quirky, and he explains how this is key to understanding all use types across the city and what other places can potentially learn from this. We also touch on Brighton and Hove Albion, as well as Buddhism, so literally something for everyone. Max, hello, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Jim, yourself?
Yeah, not too bad at all, thank you. Now, one of the many reasons we're talking, I'm not sure if you saw it, there was a story in EG a couple of weeks back about Brighton City Council, and it announced what I guess is a laudable aim of wanting to create more of a, you know, a high wage economy for the city. And it thinks the major obstacle in that is the lack of decent sized grade A office space in the city, because that's kind of leaving, you know, a lot of successful startups with nowhere to go locally. Do you agree with that as an analysis? And do you think that's where the council's focus should be in terms of, you know, driving uptake?
I think obviously having the grade A large office space about is a great thing to have, but it's probably not what Brighton's about. Mm-hmm. Whilst it's great to have the big employers there, such as American Express, which is great for the city, Brighton, it's part of its USP really is that it's about great small startups that like cool, quirky, affordable spaces. So I think that the council might be missing the point a bit there, really, would be better focusing on making sort of smaller affordable spaces for small businesses in the city, which is what we generally seem to attract. And a lot of these small businesses go on to greater things, and there should be more encouragement towards that and looking after these guys.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the whole debate within offices, I suppose, has been flight to quality and people having loads of money to spend on just really plush offices. But that, I guess that misses out, you know, operators at a level below that that don't have that budget.
Yeah, very, very much so. There have been some new offices coming into the city where they've been up at sort of levels of £35-40 a square foot, plus big service charges, big rates. You miss out on the little guys, and I think this is hence where you can see the success of so many of the co-working centres in Brighton, where guys that could be working from home don't want to. They want to be in a community want to have that little ability to jump into an office space and be surrounded by others at an affordable level, really.
Sure. Okay. I mean, generally speaking, how welcome is it when councils get involved in things like this? I mean, do you think things are best left purely to the private sector, or do you think there are advantages between, you know, public-private partnerships?
It's great to have the public sector involved in things and making certain things happen that probably private landlords can't because of who they are at the end of the day. But probably private landlords are a little bit more in touch, particularly local ones. We work with some great landlords where they create great quirky office spaces and their tenants love them and they stay with them for a number of years. Whereas, you look at council offices and they're a rather bland, standard fit out that the people that come to Brighton don't want to see. I think it's great if everybody can work together, but I think the council really do need to take on board more input from those in the know rather than going down a blind alleyway.
Sure. OK. I mean, I guess one of the biggest advantages is that if you're working with the council, planning probably isn't going to be a problem.
Interesting question. sort of, they are all very much different departments, so not always joined up. Obviously, sort of, when there is a council project, they probably do get more positive input. But yeah, different departments. And I remember a planning officer many years ago saying to me when I was trying to acquire a council property, I don't know why I'm being put under so much pressure with this. The answer was, well, it's a council property and you're the council. But their opinion wasn't sort of akin to those in the property department, shall we say.
Something I didn't know about Brighton until I looked it up yesterday is that until the local elections this year, I think for about 20 years, the council was in no overall control. How helpful is it is now you've actually got someone with an outright majority to kind of have them running things and pushing things forward rather than having to, you know, win consensus for every tiny little thing?
I guess we'll have to wait and see. It didn't seem to stop people doing what they wanted before. It'll be interesting to see. But from my experience, sort of certainly with sort of road changes and sort of cycle lanes and similar things like that, the council seem to have done as they've pleased up until now.
Fair enough. Okay. I mean, that's probably enough party politics. More broadly speaking, then, if we look specifically at offices, how's the market been this year?
It's not been bad. I think sort of there's been a lot of negative press, but we've still managed to do a lot of deals. And probably one of the positives there has actually been the Class E use coming in. And it's enabled sort of a greater degree of flexibility with different operators that have come in. We've done some deals with beauty therapists and people where they've gone into offices that might not otherwise have let that easily. We also put a art gallery where you get to drink wine into an office premises.
Ideal.
So some great uses have come about that sort of fit into Class E use. He didn't get many things right, but I think that was one of Boris's glory moments, shall we say.
There's been, you know, a lot of speculation since the start of the pandemic onwards about the future of the office and whether it has a future. And I think, you know, we more or less agree that it does. But are we at a stage now where we can say with confidence what that future looks like in terms of what occupiers want and what landlords are going to have to provide?
I think occupiers are still trying to find their feet as to what they need at the moment. It's sort of interesting talking to so many different occupiers in the way that sort of the dynamics changing for them in the amount of people they've got in an office from one moment to the next, where we've got the hybrid working. I think there's still a lot of people whereby they might have one or two days a week where the office is full, but they're sitting there with it empty for 3 days a week. And I've been talking to some of the serviced and co-working operators about this, and they're looking at sort of the dynamics of what they can create, whether it be you might have a company that shares an office sort of with another company or another two companies sort of throughout the course of the week, and they have their heavy duty days where they'll fill the office for one company or another, but they've got the flexibility to drop into the co-working space on other days, or have an office swap where there's a smaller office available between two companies. So I think there's going to be a lot of that that happens. Companies are really still trying to sort of work out what is best for them at the moment. At the same time, it's creating a lot of activity for us because whilst companies are working out that they don't need as much space, they're dropping down into smaller offices that can be more suitable for them and adapting accordingly.
Okay. We move on then to the retail sector, because I think that's also quite a big part of what you do. There's been huge changes at national level with, you know, the rise of online shopping and the demise of a lot of the sort of traditional high street brands. How are things looking in Brighton and East Sussex at the moment?
We've got some great locations, such as sort of the Lanes and the North Lane, that have got real character and full of independence, and are different to what you'll see throughout the rest of the country. Obviously, different locations throughout the country have got similar areas. Some haven't, but when I look sort of locally, Kent, Sussex, sort of where you've probably got places like Chichester and Tunbridge Wells, they've been hit the hardest, because they've had really prime retail locations that have been at top rents, and sort of where occupiers have gone, they've been harder to replace. Whereas Brighton, particularly the North Lane, even throughout COVID, the vacancy rates were really at a minimum.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, I mean, people talk a lot about, you know, one of the success stories of recent years has been, you know, even though we've seen a lot of the big chains collapse or whatever, we've seen a lot of independent providers springing up in their place. I mean, you know, maybe not in the huge department store levels, but we're seeing a lot more independence and a lot more kind of reason to travel from one town to another because they'll actually have something different. But, you know, that's kind of always been Brighton's strength, as far as I can recall, you know, that independent retail sector. So, I mean, has that made you much more resilient against a retail downturn?
I think so, yeah. It certainly made Brighton resilient, and probably for 20, 30 years whilst I've been in the industry, we've always said Brighton's in a bubble, because as one retailer goes, there'll be somebody else that comes in with something new and quirky. And yeah, you look at sort of the North Lane, it was where the body shop started. And Anita Roddick used to cycle over from Littlehampton to sort of run her shop there. And yeah, we can see where that sort of ended up. I think sort of you look at the moment, there's a Bird and Blend down in the North Lane, where they've grown to sort of multiple units throughout the country and done really well for themselves. So it's a great place for entrepreneurs to come and sort of build something from and progress from there. So it's those little shops that are affordable, and it keeps things interesting, as opposed to we can all go to any shopping centre throughout the country and see the same shops in each of those. And yeah, they serve a purpose, but it's the same wherever you go, whereas Brighton really has got that. And I think sort of at the same time, it's got the sort of edgy side and let's go and party feel to it, which draws everybody down.
Sure. Okay. I mean, do you think other towns can learn from that and to an extent copy it? You know, can they foster that sort of bohemian spirit that Boston's got, that Brighton's got, and, you know, encourage those types of independent startups? Or is that, you know, something innate, you know, a place either has it or it doesn't?
It's a tricky one. I think you've got pockets of London where it's got areas like Brighton, where you look at the Camdens, the Sohos, and Brighton gets referred to Camden by the Sea. So I'm not sure whether it's Brighton copying Camden or Camden copying Brighton. But yeah, you go around the country, sort of, obviously you yourself are up in Manchester. You've got cool, quirky bits to Manchester that draws people in. Birmingham, Leeds, all these cities have sort of their different draws. Brighton obviously is a city now as opposed to a town, but it's always had sort of a draw. But yeah, I don't know whether anybody can recreate themselves. I think sort of Brighton's got that history, where you sort of look back to the Mods and the Rockers, and it gives it that history, and different locations will have it. But yeah, I'm not sure anybody could recreate what there is there in that place already.
One of the sectors that I think people thought would really struggle in a cost of living crisis is restaurants, but what's the occupier sentiment like there, and how healthy does that scene feel right now?
It's still pretty positive. Sort of speaking to a lot of restaurateurs, I think they're finding it difficult, sort of with the rising costs, and they're having to pass that on to customers. I think some are being hit harder than others. The guys that are good and sort of are at the top of the market, they've probably got clientele that are somewhat less affected. And sort of if they're paying £300 for a meal instead of £200, it probably doesn't make a great deal of difference to them. But it's probably that middle sector that are finding it the hardest, where they've got customers that are families, and they're having to sort of watch their budgets that much more. And whereas before they might have gone out once a week, they might be going out once a month now. That's the tricky bit. That said, there's still a strong degree of confidence, I think, from operators. They're still got requirements and looking to get into premises. We've done sort of a few deals sort of in the last 12 months. Sort of Dishoom have come to Brighton. We've put them in to the Lanes. From what I understand, I've not managed to get down there yet, but there's queues out the door, as they have everywhere. We've also put sort of an independent sort of Turkish restaurant in at Brighton Marina, who's going great guns. Sort of also put Karen's Diner in at the Marina, who again also seem to be doing pretty well, despite the fact they offend everybody that goes in.
Now, I know people who've kind of opened restaurants in the last couple of years, whatever, and they said, you know, initially great, but now with the cost of electricity, cost of food, they're just kind of just about breaking even. So I think, you know, maybe a lot of them are just kind of keeping their heads down until things improve.
Yeah, well, it's I think it's something that, yeah, the government might sort of need to help with. Obviously, there was support during lockdown, but I think that's what's come as quite a shock to a lot of operators, is they had a huge amount of support during a certain period, where in some instances I think they were actually making more money than they were pre-COVID. And then that rug got pulled, and now's where sort of they're really feeling the pinch.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Now, how big a part of your overall mix is the industrial sector? What type of units tend to do best? And how do you see the needs in that sector evolving over the next few years?
So industrial is probably about 10% of our market, where we've got the downs on one side and the sea on the other. There's a limited amount of industrial sort of in Brighton, because obviously it's generally sort of the least valuable space. What we're finding is, yeah, obviously online retailers sort of need the space for their businesses, which is pretty strong, and distribution. The other side of it is, again, with the sort of the Class E use, we're seeing a lot of operators sort of with a need for industrial, such as wall climbing, paddle gyms, and a lot of leisure uses as well. So yeah, there's certainly demand for the industrial on that side of things, and I'm sure that will continue on the leisure side. But yeah, I think it will just sort of carry on as it is, but it's going to be very much that sort of distribution side of things. Whether Brighton's the right spot for it, there's a degree, but you can see where the strength is sort of up the road in locations like Crawley, where you've got sort of stronger access links at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Okay. You personally, you moved to Eightfold in 2019 after 20 years with another local agent called Karen Priddle. What were Eightfold's specialities when you joined, and what made you think there was an opportunity there to, you know, really boost its commercial offerings?
Well, like Eightfold didn't exist at that time. So a friend of mine, Dan Lyons, had an existing residential lettings business, which was called Brighton Accommodation Agency. And we came together and said, look, let's do something together. Brighton Accommodation Agency didn't really suit me as a commercial agent. We came up with the name Eightfold, which was sort of based on the noble Buddhist Eightfold Path, sort of had quite a nice aura about it. And Dan carried on with the residential letting side, and I picked up and set up the commercial side as Eightfold. It was interesting times because at first we were like, oh, we're just a little agent, let's get going, see how things go. And then COVID kicked in sort of about 4 months after we started, and everything fell off a cliff. But I was pretty sort of agile and mobile, working on a laptop and a mobile phone. So whilst others were scratching around trying to get hold of laptops because they were in short supply, we were sort of running at 100%. And because it was only me on the commercial, the option was close the business down or carry on. Whereas a lot of our competitors put everybody on furlough and were working on skeleton staff. We picked up a lot of clients and carried on, worked hard. We are where we are now as a result. So quite positive, really.
Good stuff. OK, that brings me on nicely to my next question, actually. I don't know whether you know, but EG, we've recently launched a revamped version of the On Demand Rankings, which means you can kind of drill down into much greater detail in kind of how, you know, people are doing business. And it's happy reading for you guys. Like in Brighton, I think you're currently top in terms of deal numbers for the year to date, and also combined square feet. And you also done more deals than anyone else in East Sussex this year. So what do you feel you're getting right? How have you managed it?
A lot of late nights, weekends.
It's annoying that there's no substitute for hard work, isn't it?
Yeah. We build good relationships with a lot of our clients, which is nice. And we've got some good clients as well, which is a massive help, because if you've got good clients and they've got good properties and they're sensible, sort of you can work well with them and make deals happen. I think long and short of it's putting the hours in. We try and be clever with our marketing. We put more out there, I think, on the social media side of things than others. Just being consistent and grinding it out and trying to sort of negotiate in the best way and make things happen. But it's managing lots of things. I think that one of the big key things is sort of making sure you've got the right solicitors on the deals as well. Because if you've got the wrong ones, they can sometimes be finished before they've started. It's building good relationships with everybody around. And I think sort of trying to make it a real people business as opposed to sort of being a faceless brand that nobody knows who they're dealing with at the end of the day.
Fair enough. Yeah. Okay. Good stuff. Okay. And now Brighton itself. What do you like about living in? You don't live in Brighton, do you? You live nearby, however. What do you like about the city? I mean, what makes it a great place to do business? And do you think it's got a kind of definable USP?
Brighton, yeah. I think sort of as we said earlier, it's sort of that sort of special place with its individuality, and it's got a massive draw to people. It has done for hundreds of years as the place to go for a weekend away, it's got that draw and people keep coming back. I think it's changed very much in the sort of the way people travel to Brighton, probably more on the train so than driving. I think the F&B side of things in Brighton is very strong, and people come to Brighton to have fun, and I think that's the word that's associated with it at the end of the day. It draws people down for the weekend, tourism is a strong part of it, as well as drawing people down for work and university. It's certainly got attraction to people, I think, across the country, and it's obviously got the sea.
Indeed. Okay. Now, we also need to briefly mention Brighton and Hove Albion, because I think you're a football fan. It's kind of been a remarkable story. It was just over 10 years ago you were playing in quite a dilapidated old athletics ground. It's European football. And I think as important with a reputation for being one of the kind of best run clubs in the country. How much of a lift does that give the city, and how much does that kind of reputation for, running a business smartly kind of rub off on the rest of the city?
Brighton's been brilliant, and My understanding is it's bringing in sort of tens of millions of pounds every year, sort of with the supporters coming in. Great to see sort of lots of international fans coming over and following particular players. But yeah, no, it's been great. I'm not sure whether I'd sort of say the business model of the club rubs off necessarily on anyone locally, but I think it certainly gives a platform for a lot of businesses to come together. There's various sort of networking events that go on at the club, and sort of when you look at sort of the corporate side of things, it allows sort of a lot of local businesses to network up there and come together. And yeah, it's great where sort of you see the sponsors at the Albion, which are getting sort of worldwide coverage now. And I look at them where some of them are sort of local friends, and so yeah, wow, that's so and so, and they're on sort of Sky Sports being shown across the world right now. So a real positive there. Tony Bloom, I think, sort of got a lot of influence in a lot of other businesses locally as well, which is a positive
Sure. Okay. Have you thought about putting an eightfold board or sponsorship board up there, or is the marketing budget not quite at that level yet?
too. We'd love to, but I don't think the marketing budget's
Yeah.
quite there yet. Probably getting further away from us with their success.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay. Now we started by talking about the council there in Brighton, but let's kind of talk about bigger powers. If you kind of had the ear of the government or even a magic wand, what's the one thing that would kind of really help commercial real estate locally?
I think the government needs to address the planning process. Class E coming in was great, but sort of in terms of planning, the process needs to be streamlined. If there was more flexibility in certain areas, perhaps that would help, and sort of take the burden off of the planners on things that don't need addressing. The other thing I think the government probably need to address is business rates. At the moment, there's sort of a disparity there where some people pay none, and then there's other businesses which are still relatively small, but we're say 20, 30 employees, and giving those 20, 30 people a job, but they don't get the discount, and need to make more money to sort of cover those business rates. And I look at that and just feel that there's probably a discount that should be attributed to those companies as well. Because they're finding it just as tough as the small ones. And somebody once said to me, I pay £20 a week in business rates, and because I'm a small business, I don't pay them anymore. It's wonderful, it's great, but it doesn't make any difference to me. Whereas the guys that are paying £30,000-£40,000 a year, it does make a difference to them. So something needs to be addressed in that respect, really.
Sure. Excellent. Okay. And just finally, obviously you're a Radius contributor. How useful do you find using that? When, you know, how useful is it to be able to kind of see how you're doing compared to the rest of the market?
It's nice to sort of jump on and have a look at that. We've got quite a good system with our CRM system where everything comes through in real time as we do the deals. So sort of jokingly, I can say it's great we don't get bugged by researchers saying, "Can I have lots of details?" But yeah, it's great to see where you are in the market, see who your competitors are at the end of the day.
Perfect. Excellent. Okay. Well, on that happy note, I think we'll bring things to a close. Max, thank you ever so much for your time. Really appreciate that.
Brilliant. No, thank you.